Hello, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Be the Adult podcast. Thanks so much for joining our journey of learning how to parent so that we can be the best adults we can be. Today, Nancy sits down with Laura Reagan, an integrative trauma therapist in the greater Baltimore area. She owns a group practice, the Baltimore Annapolis Center for Integrative Healing, where she offers therapy, clinical supervision, and consultation. She's also the host of her own podcast, called Therapy Chat, a popular interview-based show focused on trauma, relationships, self-compassion, creativity, and more. And Trauma Chat, a limited podcast where Laura shares bite-sized information about trauma in short episodes intended for the general public. Laura founded the Trauma Therapist Network, a platform dedicated to teaching people that trauma is real, healing is possible, and help is available. Laura's website is www.traumatherapistnetwork.com. Please see the show notes for further information. We hope you enjoy this important conversation. And as always, we would love it if you would subscribe, rate, review, and share our podcast with those who could benefit from it. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Be the Adult podcast. Be the Adult is a nonprofit organization that provides blueprints for calm and effective parenting so that children can grow into their best selves. Because ultimately, we aren't raising children. We are raising little people who will one day be adults.
So welcome, Laura Reagan. I'm excited to have you here. We've been chatting for a few minutes and I already love your energy.
Thanks.
Welcome. And I'm really enjoying your podcast. I've been enjoying your podcast for a long time. The information that you are sharing with the therapist world and then the general population is so valuable and relevant, unfortunately or unfortunately, however we want to look at that. Yeah.
So thank you. That means a lot to me to hear that, Nancy. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Yeah, I'm really excited to chat. And I would love to begin asking, what I ask every guest, being the adult, right, is the name of our nonprofit. And it means so many different things to all of us. So I'm curious to give us some ground from where your what your frame of reference is about being an adult. If you wouldn't mind sharing what that means to you.
Sure. Well, when I heard the name Be the Adult, I immediately thought about parentified children. You know, as a therapist, I work with a lot of children who have, you know, that sense of being very mature for their age, seeming to have a lot of world weariness, you know, even little kids like 8, 9. And usually that's because they've had a lot of heavy responsibilities and experiences that they've been through and had to carry. So it's really important for us as parents and adults to remember that kids are kids and let them be kids. I think it's really important for child development that a parent can be a safe and secure, reliable, trustworthy figure to the child, because that gives the child the space to develop their own independent identity. It's kind of like that idea of when a child is learning to walk and they can walk away from the parent knowing the parent will be there when they come back. It's that same idea. So it allows them the freedom to explore because they know if they get scared, there's someone safe to come back to. And that's what, you know, makes adults when they're 18, 25, whatever it is, when they go out into the world to really begin their own adult lives, they have the feeling inside, I can do this. I'll be okay. Instead of I'm not sure, I'm really, even though they might be scared, right. You know?
Right. So it's interesting. I appreciate, I heard two different things. And one I haven't heard from a guest and other people that I've ask this question. So it's, I love this fresh perspective you bring. So it sounds like your first thought was about being an adult is not wanting to kind of put that onto our children, that meaning that they need to grow up faster or incongruent with their chronological age, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I heard this notion of safety, right? And how being an adult, tell me if this is right. Being an adult means that we can make contact with our child, right, or children in such a way that they have the safety to look inward and grow instead of trying to survive or adjust to some type of unhealthy environment. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. Like basically a child who's, let's say, a child is living in a family where there's a lot of disruption, they don't have a safe place to live. And just using that example, maybe because of poverty, the family might have to move a lot, or there might be a lot of instability in the parents' job situation and things like that. For the child, if they're being adult-like, it means they're like, I'm okay, I'm fine, don't worry about me. I'm not going to be any trouble for you, parent. I know you're already going through so much. I'll be less of a burden. I'll try to be really, quote, good, mm-hmm. quiet, you know, perfect, get great grades. So I'll be one less thing for you to have to worry about.
Right.
Whereas a natural reaction for a child in that situation is to be scared and look to the parent and say, you know, I don't want to start a new school. What if I don't make friends? Or what if I don't fit in? Or what's it going to be like in our new home? Or why do we have to leave? And all of those kinds of questions that could be upsetting for the parent to hear naturally. Mm-hmm. But they're indicating that the child needs some comfort and guidance and reassurance from the parent that if the child senses, and it's usually not something that the parents, well, it can be, but it's not always something the parents are saying directly. But if the child senses, my parent can't really handle how I feel, so I can't express it to them, then the child is basically stuck feeling like it's up to them to figure out how to handle what they're going through. And they can't because they're just little kids.
Right. So it's a role reversal almost. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I can imagine, here's the beginning of using the word trauma, right? How traumatic that would be to a child, mm-hmm. because they're not equipped yet to show up as an adult, right? Developmentally.
Exactly. Because it's a terribly difficult situation for the parents, for the adults. It's not that it doesn't bother them, but you know, children don't have the ability to identify, understand, express how they feel, make sense of it. When feelings get overwhelming, you know, they need us as safe, capable, competent adults to let them know that they're going to be okay because we're going to take care of them and make sure that they are okay. Otherwise, they feel like they have to take care of themselves and the parent sometimes.
Right. And I imagine how overwhelming that would be.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's far beyond a child's capacity, which is what makes it a traumatic experience. Is, you know, we always talk about trauma and people have heard that word now. It's a buzzword. But, you know, I think still most people think of like things like a plane crash or, something that is seen as not a normal, common, everyday type of experience, which sadly, poverty and homelessness and those types of experiences are common for very many people, but they can be very traumatic because, you know, children need a sense of like predictability, knowing what to expect in general to make them feel safe to be able to be exploring. So when life is very chaotic and unpredictable, despite the parents' best efforts to, you know, ease things for the kids, that is a traumatic thing for the child because it overwhelms their capacity to cope. So it doesn't just have to be something like, you know, a fire, a flood, a hurricane, or some type of violence or abuse, but any situation that overwhelms the child's capacity to cope can be traumatic. And then what causes the long-term effects of trauma, you know, where it affects us throughout our lives, is when there's no one safe, trusted person to help them make sense of that experience. So it's just kind of like stuck. They can't process it. So it's just there and it stays there until one day they're able to look back and go, wow, that was really impactful for me. So I didn't get what I needed in that situation or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can feel that right here in right in my heart area. So it sounds like it's not only maybe an event or a situation in life, but that can cause that harm, right? But it's how or if the child has someone that can help them make sense of it, attend to it, kind of walk next to them through it, maybe hold their heart. Is that, can you speak more about that? How as parents we could help our children deal with those events that they might perceive as traumatic? Or
sure. And to kind of expand on what I was saying before, in that situation where it's very chaotic and the parent is trying to make things be as easy as possible for the family within whatever they have control over. If you have, let's say a parent's working two jobs, so they're exhausted and they're, you know, not home a lot, and the child is trying to not be a burden, not be a problem. So they're trying to be really good. Mm-hmm. And may not even connect, the child may not connect at all to a feeling of that they're not okay, because it's kind of an unconscious process. Okay. But so we have a child who's feeling all these feelings that they don't understand, so they just feel disconnected from. Mm-hmm. And then a parent who's doing the best they can and not really seeing any indication that their child's not okay, because they get good grades, they are, you know, helping with chores and doing things around the house. So they don't realize how burdened the child's nervous system is mm-hmm. by the experiences. But children, like animals, really, they sense a lot. They use a lot of intuition and a body sense of being safe or not being safe. That's why they run around, they scream, they do all of those things that adults don't do normally. And a felt sense is when you have like an embodied experience of, I feel safe, or something's wrong, you know. And I think as people are listening, they can probably relate to that, mm-hmm. where you go into a situation, you go, something doesn't feel right here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's how children operate. It's like, they look with their eyes, they hear with their ears, but their bodies really pick up the energy that comes from the environment. So if their parent is, I'll say, this is a therapy word, regulated,
right.
Which means basically they feel emotions and have thoughts that are aligned with what's happening.
Right.
And they feel like they can handle things.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean they're not sad or not scared, but they're able to, it's within manageable limits for them. Mm-hmm. If they're in that state, then a child can come to them and say, I'm scared. Can you help me? And the parent can respond in a way that's attuned to what the child is needing. Mm-hmm. And then the child is comforted. But if the parent is overwhelmed with their own fear or their own sadness, grief, you know, and there's so much heaviness mm-hmm. on everyone right now, including very much on parents.
Yes.
That if the child feels scared and goes to the parent, but they sense, she's as scared as me, if not more,
right,
then they're not going to be able to get the comfort. So it's not just what we say and do or don't say and don't do, but the sense of safety that they feel from us. So one of the really hard things is that we can be very, very, very anxious mm-hmm. and not even know it mm-hmm. as adults, because we're good at just blocking it out and just getting things done, especially when we're in that kind of situation where it's like survival mode.
Yes.
So we think, you know, well, I'm doing okay considering.
Right.
And, but the child can sense the anxiety and it makes them feel anxious because they're like, I can see that mom says everything's okay, but it doesn't feel like mom feels okay. So now I don't understand, either something's weird with mom or with me. Mm-hmm. And usually what happens is they internalize it about themselves and say, oh, something's wrong with me. I shouldn't be like this, you know?
Yeah. And so then they start to not trust, right?
Yes.
Their experience or their experience with
exactly.
their own internal experience or their experience with the parent. I mean, we all try our best and there's just so many angles that we can mess this up. It's just so difficult, right? So having the awareness of ourself, right? And if we're regulated is key. And then that will give us a better shot at being able to really see, okay, is my child flying under the radar because he or she is, you know, anxious or feeling like they have to stay small because I can't handle things? Or is this just kind of who they are? I guess the awareness is a good place to start. I'm trying to take this into, okay, so how do we try as parents continue to try to stay regulated in this really difficult time and help our children's nervous system stay regulated? I know that's a really big question, but any piece of that you want to address?
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's of value to let the audience know that being regulated isn't something that you like get to and stay at. It's more of an ongoing process of basically identifying how regulated you feel in any given moment. So, and learning, I think, you know, if we were to distill this down into the most basic thing people can do is learning to identify what it feels like in our bodies when we are regulated and what it feels like when we're not. Mm. And through that, we can begin to become aware of situations that tend to cause us to become dysregulated.
Okay.
You know, like let's say if we're short on money to pay the bills for the month, that's most people are going to feel pretty stressed out about that. Right. So, you know, some things are kind of predictable like that, but there are other things like maybe this is one of the strange things that happens for us as adults because of the ways that maybe our attachment needs weren't met when we were children or the unresolved traumas that we are still affected by because we don't realize that they were traumatic. Mm-hmm. We can, like I was saying before, kind of think we're fine when we're really not. So let's say you have an adult whose parent wasn't very well attuned to their needs when they were growing up. And they always tried to be, quote, good and quiet and perfect. And that's just the way they learned to be. So they grow up and they're still in that space. And it's kind of like under the surface, they're very anxious. But what you see on the outside is like they move fast, they get things done, you know, they're always on time, but they might, you know, they might never really slow down. Mm-hmm. They're not really that well tuned into what they feel inside.
Okay.
Just go, 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 go. Do more, do more, do more, do more. For kids, kids don't like that. I mean, that's just, it's not honoring your natural pace.
Right.
So they're being rushed and they're feeling like, you know, I gotta get my shoes on real fast. We gotta go, you know, and it makes them feel stressed. And then the parent's not tuning into how they feel. So it can be things like that, or it can be like relationships where maybe the parent has a close relationship with their parent, but every time they're around their mom, because of unresolved trauma, they actually feel very anxious, but they don't pick up on it. But the child picks up on it. So, you know, it's beginning to notice those situations that actually cause us to feel anxious inside or feel really overwhelmed with sadness or anger is a very helpful way to learn about your body's messages when it's regulated or dysregulated, and then help your child. All you have to do with your child is work on how regulated you are, and mm-hmm. they will be more regulated. And then you'll be more attuned to them and be able to see when they're getting stressed and get to them maybe before they even realize it.
So they'll feel our presence, right? That we're
exactly.
And they'll feel safer, you're talking about before. So mm-hmm. it's interesting. So how trauma, what I'm hearing, tell me if this is correct. So when we're triggered and our behavior doesn't really, or that triggering behavior from ourselves, dysregulation doesn't really match, isn't congruent mm-hmm. with the moment, with the situation, that's a clue, right? That maybe our trauma history is getting triggered.
That could be, yeah. And I think congruency is a really good word. When your reaction to something is incongruent to the situation, if it's a stressful situation and you're not feeling stressed, that's a clue. Normally we're like, oh, good.
Right.
I wasn't stressed. Right. But it's actually sometimes what we're really doing is kind of blocking out what's happening okay. and going into survival mode. And that's a great coping strategy that's unconscious and happens automatically. But it also is incongruent to the situation. So if we don't at some point get back in touch with what we really felt inside about what was happening, then that's just another thing that's like there under the surface, kind of bubbling up sometimes when it does. And the other way that we can tell is when we have a reaction that's out of proportion to the situation on the other extreme, like we're super angry, like our child's being whiny and we're like screaming at them because they're whining, you know, that's out of proportion to the situation, because it's just, you know, it's just an annoying thing kids do. A way to try to get their needs met is whining, but it might make me blow up, because if I whined when I was a child, my parent screamed at me or spanked me or whatever, I was somehow shunned. Instead of getting my needs met more, I got them met less. So when I hear my child whining, suddenly I just can't take that. I've got to make that stop.
Gotcha.
So that would be a clue.
Yeah. And so then with our children, so you talked about the daughter or the, you know, sorry, I remember you were talking about a boy or girl who is, you know, kind of flying under the radar and being, quote, good. Can you speak to the other, maybe the hyper dysregulation part of that, what that might look like and how we could help them?
Sure. And kids, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So definitely one way that kids can react to stressful situations in their lives is that like good, perfect type behavior, being real small, staying out of the way. But another way is that they act out. And that's what usually brings kids to therapy, is they can't sit still in school. They aren't listening in school. The teacher's saying they're a problem. They keep getting up out of their seat, or they won't sit down. They're running around, or when I call their name, they don't even pay attention to me. It's disrespectful or insubordinate, or, you know, those are the behavioral words that we often hear. Or a child who seems just really sad and not social and isolated and just wants to kind of, another one that goes along on the more good side, but knows always in a book, or they're so absorbed in video games, it's all they want to do. And I'm not opposed to video games at all. Right. They can be a great social thing, but if they're in their room alone playing video games whenever they're not at school, and you have to drag them downstairs to figuratively to get them to eat dinner, and then they just want to be right back up there, you know, that's a clue that they're not feeling connected.
Yeah, withdrawn, I guess.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it can be running around, it can be aggressive behavior, it can be yelling, it can be tons of conflicts with friends or problems at school, attention problems. There's so many different ways that trauma can show up for kids that, but a lot of times it's like spacing out so they don't pay attention, and it's seen as possible attention deficit disorder or something like that, when it really could be that what's happening is the child is lost in thought, they're daydreaming, zoning out, and where their mind goes is, that was so scary when, you know, the landlord was banging on the door and saying that we had to move out, or we came home from school and our stuff was all in the yard in garbage bags and my landlord had thrown it out and I knew we had to move again. You know, so they can't process it, so they zone out. And when they zone out, that's where their mind is, but they don't know. It's unconscious. So they're kind of reliving those experiences. And then the reason why we call it acting out is because it's kind of like they're acting out something to tell you something's wrong here. Right. But it doesn't, it's so confusing because it's not like they say, I feel traumatized because my family doesn't have a stable home.
Right.
They're just, you know, zoned out, withdrawn. The teacher thinks they don't listen. They're a new kid in school anyway. So the teacher doesn't really know them and doesn't know much about their story. You know, those kinds of things. Just, I mean, I'm just using that one example of the unstable home life because I think it's one that's easy to understand, that it's not the parent's fault. It's not their intention to harm the child. It's just something that's happening that does affect the child.
Right. And the child's trying to cope in his or her best way with that trauma to make sense of it. So tell me if you will, some ideas you might have of, I hear from parents a lot of guilt, shame around things that, you know, we all do our best, but none of us are perfect, right?
We're not.
I back and I say, oh my goodness, what was I thinking, right? And I'm trained.
Me
right,
too.
To do better, right? So can you offer some ideas, some suggestions, maybe twofold, one of how to have more grace for ourselves, and the other is maybe how to begin to navigate our relationship with our kids if we feel like there's been some trauma in their history that, you know, big T's, little T's, that we begin to maybe become more aware of that and address it bigger picture. Is that clear what I'm asking?
Sure. I think so. How to have more grace for oneself as a parent and how to navigate the relationship with your kids if they have trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, well, having more grace for yourself is very hard. And the best thing that I found is, I don't know if maybe every other guest you've had has said the same thing, but self-compassion practice is the best thing I know to help with this. And that is basically realizing that you're only human. You can't be perfect because no one can. And you really want to be the best parent you can. And it hurts when you realize that you've failed yourself or your child as a parent. It hurts.
It really does.
So one thing that often happens with us as parents is that we begin to feel something about that. Like, I feel like I might have let my child down in some way. And then we quickly go away from that. No, I didn't. It's fine. Or the child says, you know, you weren't there for me when I needed you. And that crushes us so much that we can't meet our child where they are. So I guess I'm answering both at the same time. but we feel so much shame when we think that we let our child down, because it's activating our own feelings of how our parents let us down. Mm-hmm. Because they did, because they all have, because nobody really knew that much about attachment and parenting until like the past 20 years, really, in the mainstream. And it's still not, you know, that common knowledge.
Right.
So if you can allow yourself to tune into that feeling about, I feel like I let my child down, and just let that be there, just feel the feeling, you know, it's kind of like a mindful practice. You sort of go inward with yourself, which is, I'm like looking down right now and I have my hand in my heart because I'm, you know, it's like, yeah, that really hurts. I wanted to get that right and I didn't. And that's so painful. And just letting that be there and then telling yourself, you know, I really want to be a great parent. I really have tried hard and I did my best. And I don't have to be perfect. You know, I can't be perfect. So just being with yourself when you feel that way and not saying, well, it's not true. I really was fine. You're not even trying to negate the feeling. It's just saying, yeah, it hurts. When I have that feeling that I let my child down, that really hurts. Because when you do that, it gives you more compassion for yourself and your child. It happens naturally. They begin to feel more compassion for your child. It makes you more available emotionally to your child just by practicing that with yourself. You don't even have to say anything about it to them for them to sense mm-hmm. you're more open. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't understand this fully when I first became a therapist, but we are going to love our parents. Our children are going to love us. Even if we mistreated them horribly, they still biologically are wired to love us and need us and want us. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when we feel rejected by our children, it's really something that's coming up that's from the past where maybe we felt rejected by our parents or by someone else. Mm-hmm. And all we have to do is be open and say, I feel like I let you down there. You know, if you want to talk about this, I'm open to it. And I promise I'll listen. And, you know, most of the time your child's going to be like, Mom, it's okay. I know you did your best. Because once they see that you feel bad about it and you acknowledge without explaining, but I couldn't do any better because this, that. Just saying, I feel I let you down. And I want to know if you want to talk about that, I want you to know that I'm here and I can handle that. Because it kind of like negates that thing from the beginning that I was talking about where the child feels she can't handle this. So I can't go to her.
Mm-hmm. What a beautiful circle you just made with that. Yeah. Yeah. And what I was thinking when you said that is, and just the value in communicating that to your child. To me, it would be, you matter so much to me, right? That I'm going to be transparent and honest and let you know how important it is for me to do my best for you. And I didn't. And I'm sorry about that. and the value just in communicating.
Exactly. And it gives the child permission to also be human and not have to be perfect either.
Right.
Because another thing that happens is they put us up on this pedestal, even as we feel like a total mess, they see us as everything.
Right.
And so, you know, when we say, I know I didn't get that right. I let myself down there and I feel I let you down. I wanted to do better and I'm going to keep working on it and I'm going to try to do better next time. And if you feel I'm not doing better, I want you to feel comfortable to come to me and let me know that. And I promise I will do my best to listen.
Mm.
You know, if you can actually, don't say it unless you really feel like you can do it. You can work up to that. If you're not there yet, it's okay.
Right. Good point. Yeah. Cause it's very hard to tolerate, at least for me, that tension when I know I've screwed up to actually,
me too.
I have my hands kind of cupped open and actually looking at, you know, how I didn't do something as well as I wanted to. Right.
There's shame.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much shame that comes up when, because especially, and I won't, you know, I don't know your story at all, but if we didn't get what we needed when we were growing up, and most people didn't, because, you know, it would take what our biological needs are would require for them to be met all the time would require for our parent to have no separate life.
Right.
And no other children. They would only be focused only on us all the time. And that's actually not possible.
Right.
And probably the child that would result from that would be very unhealthy. Because they wouldn't know how to deal with adversity at all.
Right. And the glue that, you know, some, the kids want us to glue ourselves to them sometimes. Right? Not literally.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's really not possible for any human to ever meet all of the emotional needs of their offspring. And that's why all we have to do is get it right more often than not. But we put this expectation on ourselves to be better than our parents were.
Mm-hmm.
And all the ways that we feel that we were failed by our parents, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to be the best parent. My child's never going to feel unloved, unwanted, unworthy, burden, or too much, or whatever it is. And then when we fail, as we will, because we are human, we mercilessly beat ourselves up and don't give ourselves credit for how hard we try and that we do get it right a lot of the time, and that our children really love us and really trust us and count on us, you know?
Mm-hmm. So to me, that comes back to the self-compassion, right? Mm-hmm. Can you share any other tools, ideas, practices that might help us show up more often than not as our best selves for our children?
Yeah, I think that being curious and about your own experiences and focusing on your own personal growth and considering that a lifelong journey rather than something like I turned 18, so now I'm fully formed and I don't need to develop any more past that. So getting in touch with your own unresolved trauma and attachment wounds, understanding how you were impacted by your childhood, because we all were. I can remember myself as a young adult and a parent kind of thinking that childhood was so long ago and not really relevant to my life now.
I can relate to that. Yes. I was there once too. Yes.
Yeah. But it is. It's basically whatever remains unresolved from childhood, whether it's from when we were 1 year old or 16, we carry those things with us. And it's part of who we are and how we see the world. But it doesn't have to be stagnant as how we are and how we see the world. Because, you know, if when I was one, let's say something really scary happened to me and I got a message that the world is not a safe place. And that's how I see the world ever since I was one. That can change. Because it's true that a lot of danger is in the world, but there's also a lot of safety. So, you know, it's whenever you're thinking all or nothing, black or white, there's no safety or everything's perfect, you know, those extremes, that's always a clue that you're seeing things from more of a traumatized place.
Interesting.
So that's one of the things I think identifying that for myself and teaching clients that has been probably one of the most helpful things to actually understand, like, what it feels like when you're having a trauma reaction.
Okay.
So an example would be like, if you're, let's say you're a married adult and you're like, my husband never listens to me. My husband won't ever do anything for me, or my husband doesn't have any feelings. He can't understand me. Things like that. Those are absolutes. And that's just not true, no matter what, because that cannot be true all the time.
But we hear it.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So when we're seeing something that way, it means that, you know, maybe you didn't grow up feeling like anybody ever listened to you. Mm. And now the person you love and trust the most, when they don't listen to you, it feels like a complete betrayal. So even though they might listen to you 9 times out of 10, that one time they don't, it's suddenly like, they never listen to me,
right?
You know?
Right.
So those are, again, some of the ways that we can identify when we're having that trauma reaction. And then what you would do when you notice it, even if you don't notice it in the moment, because it's very hard to catch it in the moment, especially at first. But when you look back and you think about that interaction, you're like, what was really happening for me? And you start thinking about whatever you can remember of the conversation. And if you don't remember a lot of it, that's also a clue that your trauma was activated.
Okay.
So whatever you can remember, you think back on it, and then you notice, well, what's happening right now? My heart's racing. Wow, it's really pounding. Wonder what that is. What's that about? You know, and you can just keep getting more curious. Even if your body reactions, it's just things like your heart pounding, or you get nauseous, or you start sweating, or you feel tearful. All of that is information. You don't necessarily have to understand exactly what it is, but if you jot it down, and then as you're jotting these things down and you're kind of tracking it over time, and you have, every time I have a conversation with my husband where I feel like he's not listening to me, and then I reflect on it later, I notice that racing heart. Wonder what that's about. If there's a pattern here, you know? And, you know, racing heart, I think most people know that kind of corresponds with anxious feelings.
Right.
Tears correspond with sadness oftentimes, but it's not always just sadness. It could be loss, grief.
Right.
You know, it could be feeling disempowered. So I would say, and I, with a caveat, I haven't read the whole book, but Brené Brown's newest book called Atlas of the Heart.
Excellent. Yes.
Yeah. It teaches a lot about emotions and the variety of emotions. And it's interesting, you know, and if you're curious about learning more about your emotions, that could be a helpful place to begin.
Excellent. And so if we circle back, what I heard is that really tuning into our body helps us with the self-awareness. And then hopefully we can have the self-compassion you talked about, but also we can notice the dysregulation. We can notice the patterns of that. And I love the word that keeps going through my head as you're talking is being curious about, it's more than one word, but being curious about ourselves, right? And hopefully modeling that, for our children. Is there anything else? I want to keep you here for a few hours and talk. I'm really enjoying our conversation and learning a lot from you. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you think would be important to share today?
Well, I do think that just to go, I have two thoughts. One is if you are interested in therapy, or maybe you've already been in therapy, people who are listening, when you're trying to work with this, it can be frustrating that you're like, I know this. I shouldn't yell at my kids. I know this, but why am I still doing it? I feel so out of control when I get in that situation. The body-oriented practices, mindfulness, art therapy, any therapies that have a bottom-up approach, which is like, in addition to art therapy, it could be music therapy, drama therapy, or some of the somatically oriented therapies like sensory motor psychotherapy, somatic experiencing, internal family systems, if it's done in a somatically oriented way, EMDR, brain spotting. And there's so many others, but those types of therapies help you get deeper to bridge that disconnect between what I know I should do or want to do and what I do. So that was the first point I wanted to make. And then the other thing is just parenting is really challenging. And it's not about blaming ourselves. It's not about blaming our kids. It's not about blaming our parents. It's just understanding we're all human. We're all trying to do the best we can. Underneath it all, there's love. Mm. And if we can remember that and stay connected to how much we love our kids and how they love us, even if it doesn't look like it because of their behavior.
Right.
They love us and depend on us. So if we want to help them feel loved and accepted and as complete humans, the more we can explore our own inner worlds, the more we'll be able to create that space so that we can be a soft place to land for them.
Mm-hmm. I have tears in my eyes as you're talking about the love. Thank you for that reminder. I really appreciate that. So in addition to the wonderful things that you have shared, could you talk a little bit about, I'm just so impressed with the podcast that you have created and the Trauma Therapist Network. I would love for you to talk about those for a few minutes and then how people might be able to hear more from you and get in touch with you, if you don't mind.
Sure, of course. I'd be happy to. And thanks. I'm so glad that you appreciate those things I do. So I have two podcasts. Therapy Chat is kind of, it's the concept is two therapists talking. So we do talk at a level of mental health professionals. A lot of people who listen are not therapists, but it can be, for some people, it's a little too heady. It's not, you know, it's beyond their understanding. But on that podcast, we talk about trauma and attachment and all the different types of therapies that people can, different ways that people can work to heal trauma. So I love that. I mean, that's very interesting to me. And I talk with a lot of authors about books about what we're talking about, childhood trauma, attachment, and loss, unmet needs. And then I have the other podcast, which is right now it's on. Only one season is done and it's on hiatus. More to come when I can. But that's called Trauma Chat. And Trauma Chat I created because I realized that a lot of people who listen to Therapy Chat are not mental health professionals. And there's basic information about trauma that I don't really cover on Therapy Chat because it's kind of like understood among the people that I'm talking with. But so I made Trauma Chat to kind of have bite-sized episodes from 5 to 20 minutes, because it can be very overwhelming when you start thinking about trauma and you can get overwhelmed very quickly. So I tried to make each episode, and there's 12, you know, on a specific subject, and it kind of goes in a progressive way so that you can learn about what it feels like to have trauma, what some of the trauma related diagnoses are, how to identify what type of situations can be traumatic. And I didn't get to get into what I wanted to there, which was, you know, how to get which types of therapy for different traumas, but that'll be coming in the next season whenever I can do it. But with that, I created Trauma Therapist Network, which is maybe a bit of an ambitious undertaking, but it was it's a website where people can learn about trauma. So similar to what you learned from Trauma Chat, there are articles, as well as both podcasts are available there with all of their episodes on the website. And then and the articles are to help you learn, like, just to see yourself in, for example, like there's an article about, like, when your partner doesn't understand your trauma, and it's kind of it's sort of like a story of a couple and them trying to connect and how their trauma gets in the way. And so plus you can find a trauma therapist on, there's a searchable directory for finding a trauma therapist. And it's not every trauma therapist in the whole world. It's only the ones who have signed up, but right now it's limited to the US. But we have about 100. So there's not one for every state, because some states have 10 and none, some have none, but that's a building thing. And the sort of little additional benefit of that site is that it's a place for trauma therapists to join to also connect with each other and give and receive support, because, you know, we're holding so much too, just like everyone else. And we need support. We're also human. So it's turning into a really beautiful thing. And I'm so grateful to be able to do it.
Yeah, it's much needed. So I appreciate that. What is that website? That's a good place to start if people want to start reading some articles, more articles about trauma.
Yeah, it's www.traumatherapistnetwork.com.
Perfect. And there's also some wonderful podcasts about parenting on your therapy chat. So listeners, check those out. They're excellent. So
thank you.
Thank you so much. And please keep on, because we all need to talk about these things, especially with what's going on in the world right now. So
yeah.
Thank you so much, and take good care.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.